Welcome back to another episode of the Burrowshire Podcast. I'm Brandon Vaught, one of the two co-hosts. Father Blake Britton is the other co-host, my best friend. Father Blake, always good to see you.
Likewise, brother.
I wanted to share some exciting news that we got from one of your own parishioners at your parish here in Florida. Here's what he said. He said, "Dear Father Blake, you and Brandon inspired the League of Extraordinary Catholic Gentlemen, as it's become to be known. The League is a group of gentlemen, most of which you know." Again, these are people in Father Blake's parish, "who have committed to 30 minutes a week taking time to sit and contemplate and appreciate something beautiful that has been picked out for that week. Maybe it's a painting, a selection of an opera or orchestra, statues, poetry, etc. Then, throughout the week, each gentleman will post some thoughts on the work on a message board of some kind. We're working to expand our appreciation and vocabulary of the good, the true, and the beautiful." And I was so delighted to hear that. I know you must have been too, especially as the pastor of this parish. But to me, it was like, I mean, every parish needs a League of Extraordinary Catholic Gentlemen and Gentlewomen. You know, we need the women's version as well. But the idea that we're intentionally going to get together to contemplate and discuss something beautiful, not only to build our appreciation for it, but our vocabulary of it, how to talk about beautiful things in an intelligent way. I just love it. I'm sure you do too.
Oh, it was totally inspirational. And when they sent me that message, and of course, they shared it with you as well, I was deeply touched, because that is also one of the goals of this podcast. This podcast is not just a place for you and I to talk to one another, but is to inspire in the hearts of the faithful and to share and to invite them into our conversation so that we can all build each other up and help each other to become more deeply fascinated with the beauty and splendor of the Catholic faith. This is a podcast that is meant to build a community of saints. So to see that's transferring over to young father and parish, again, unbeknownst to me, they just sent me that message out of the blue after listening to our podcast. It's nothing that I organized. It was totally their initiative. And I was just totally touched as a father and as a spiritual leader of this flock. It was just amazing. So I was just so grateful to share that, shared it with myself, also told my pastor about it here, the pastor of this parish, and shared it with you. It's wonderful to see the people of God being inspired that way.
Well, today we're going to be broaching the prickly topic of faith and politics. Now, lots of people have commented and emailed us asking about this. I'm going to read one comment from one of our listeners, Erin Hayes. She says, "I'm so impressed with your podcast, been listening to it regularly." Thanks, Erin. She says, "I'm a Catholic, and I was recently talking with my husband about where we can get unbiased news to stay updated on what's happening locally, nationally, worldwide. It seems so many people subscribe to skewed news sources or simply skim social media for headlines. I wonder if you could do an episode where you discuss news sources, how to interpret the news through a Catholic lens, and perhaps a deeper question of how to balance staying informed and not getting too swept up in politics or the latest social movement. Sometimes I think I err on the side of simply staying uninformed and avoiding news and politics, but then I feel bad when I don't know what's happening out there. Thanks for considering." So I suppose, Father Blake, we could talk a little bit about news and absorbing news and how Catholics can do that well. But we kind of wanted to broach the broader topic of just faith and politics in general. This episode is going to go live in early October, so about a month before the big national presidential election. And let me be very clear from the beginning what we're not going to do. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. We're not going to tell you which political party to subscribe to. It's not the role of priests or either of us on this podcast to tell you what to do politically. What we want to do is help discuss, again, general principles, kind of what we often do here on the podcast, that should shape the political mind and heart of faithful Catholics. So maybe I'll give you the first word, Father Blake. Where do you start when discussing the topic of faith and politics?
Right. Well, first and foremost, we have to reflect on what is our role in relationship to politics and to the state as Catholics. So again, this podcast is going to focus more on the general disposition with which we are to approach politics, not so much endorsing any particular political ideology. And the reason being is that it's more fundamental for us to have the correct intellectual, spiritual, moral formation so as to guide our discernment on who to vote for or what legal transactions or reforms to vote for, if there's anything happening with a bill or some sort of new legislation coming through government. The other thing that's important to focus on, of course, is faithful citizenship, meaning that we do have a responsibility. And this is where I sympathize with Aaron. And the same thing, my mother actually has a similar tendency where there is a temptation with everything going on just to say, you know what, I'm going to pretend like it doesn't exist because my life is so much more peaceful outside of this political environment. And I don't disagree with you. But of course, to do so, and Aaron points out that fact, to do so would be a negligence of our responsibility as citizens of this wonderful country, which we love so dearly and which God has blessed in such a wonderful way. And so it is important for us to understand these fundamental principles and our relationship with the state, our relationship with politics, and our role, especially in a country where liberty is prioritized, and how we're to interact and influence that positively by holding to our Catholic values. There are many Catholics in this country, baptized Catholics, and there are tens of millions of practicing baptized Catholics. That's a very influential voters block that could do a lot of good if all of our hearts are discerning with the proper kind of mentalities and thoughts. And so again, this is just more going to focus on those general mentalities, those general dispositions of the soul, so as to help us inform ourselves when we go to place our vote, or in the future, whenever we're listening to news sources or we're receiving data, how to not let ourselves be overcome by our passions or sentiments, but rather to really allow ourselves to be guided by reason and to be guided by the teachings of the church when making certain political decisions.
And let me just say, as my sort of opening statement, opening word, that
I yield the floor to you. Yes, the senator from Borough Shire.
Yes, thank you, Father Blake. Catholics should care about politics primarily because we care about the common good. That's a fundamental tenet of Catholic social teaching, of our social doctrine, that we're not just individualistic creatures caring for our own concerns and even the concerns of our family, fundamental as they are. We're also concerned about the polis, the state, the city, the common good. You can't read the Gospels without detecting in just about every chapter Jesus's commendations to care for your neighbor, to love your neighbor as yourself, to serve the poor, the sick, the hungry, the marginalized. These aren't optional things for Christians. Now, politics is one way to facilitate the common good. Of course, there are other ways that we serve the common good. You know, the Catholic social teaching is often positioned as like a three-legged stool, and you have on one of the legs the church, on another leg the state or the government, and the third leg you have like private entities, whether they be, you know, charities or nonprofit ministries or whatever, and that you need all three of these legs to serve the common good. And then here's where the analogy I think is especially helpful. If one of those legs gets longer than the other two, the stool begins to wobble. If one of the legs gets shorter than the other two, disproportionately de-emphasized, this stool is under threat of falling. You need to have all three of those equally emphasized, which is why the church has often had problems when the government gets too big at the expense of the other two, or even when the private sector gets too big and the government's role is minimized. So that's why Catholics should be concerned with politics. It's not just an ancillary thing that we can either, you know, avoid or ignore if we want, or get involved with if it appeases us. Catholics should care about politics because we care about the common good.
Yes, yes, most certainly. And because we are people who's immersed in history. Our faith is not one that's abstracted from the world. It's in the world, but not of the world. But it's still in the world. So there is this responsibility to actively participate in the different functions, especially to promote and to share the beauty of Catholic teaching and the beauty of Catholic sentiment.
Okay, let's get down to the roots. You're an etymologist, at least an amateur etymologist. So let's get into the roots of some of these words and the origin of some of these concepts. So let's start by talking about the origin of politics. What do we mean when we refer to politics? Where does it come from? What are the roots of this concept?
Well, you already mentioned we have polis, you know, of the people, this sort of notion about it being of the people. But on a much deeper level, it's rooted in economy. Now, nowadays, people think economy is strictly money. It's monetary. But originally, that word koinonia actually means of the household. It was a community, a gathering together. An economy is what is necessary in order to care for the whole. Mm. Therefore, there's a direct and intrinsic connection between economy and politics. So there's a direct connection between what is necessary to ensure the overall health and good of the whole and how that influences the legislation and the decisions that we make for the police, for the people. And so as we talk about the topic of politics, it's also important for us, once again, not to so much diminuize it, to shorten it, to abbreviate it to just endorsing any particular party or any particular ideology, but rather to look at the whole picture and to discern what platforms, what formats, what legislations ensure the overall health of the whole. And that health also needs to be discerned on a three-tiered level. It needs to be discerned spiritually, psychologically, and somatically. So we know there are three parts of the human person. You have the spiritual, which is the deepest part. You have the psychological, this mental aspect of our being, this conscience aspect of our being. And then you have the somatic or the biological, the physical component. So we need to be cared for in our bodies. We need to be cared for in our minds. We need to be cared for in our souls. I think a real good example of that would be something that the Florida bishops recently pushed in the past couple of years, which was new legislation to declare pornography an official epidemic of the state of Florida, a pandemic in the state of Florida. And it was a very successful piece of legislation. I'm grateful that the Council of Florida Bishops, as well as our legislators, were able to support it. It was also a bipartisan in many ways part of legislation. But there's a good example of the church being involved in a very healthy way and promoting something that's good for the health of the whole. We know that pornography right now is a scourge. It's something that's poisoning the minds, especially of young men. We've recognized it as now, quote unquote, a health crisis, although it's also a spiritual crisis. And we're able to influence the police, the politics of our particular economy, of our household, of our good, so that resources could be designated in order to help respond to this crisis and help to protect the young men and women in our state. So I think there's a good example of the cooperation that should take place between the church and politics, between faith and politics, and also the connection between the koinonia, the care of the household, the care of the whole, and the enactment of that care through legislation, which would be politics.
Let's maybe do a brief survey of Catholic political history, how the church has related to different political systems. You know, at first glance, you notice the church having a lot of friction with a lot of different political arrangements. One thing you'll observe is that it's rare the church endorses a particular political or economic system or platform. What more often happens is the church will say no to a problematic one. So it'll say no, for example, as it has emphatically and consistently to socialism, because socialism violates the innate dignity of the human person. It violates the value of work, and most fundamentally, it denies private property, which is a basic human right according to the Catholic Church. So it'll say no to that political system, socialism. But when you get beyond just the things it says no to, there's a pretty big umbrella of political positions, of prudential decisions, of political platforms and candidates that can fit under the Catholic umbrella. I think that's been the general trajectory of the last, say, couple hundred years as Catholic social teaching has evolved into its contemporary form. But give us a little more of a survey of Catholic political history.
Well, first of all, I want to point out that Mother Church not endorsing a particular political candidate is indicative to how she forms us as a whole. Mother Church will always is to bring us to a level of maturity to where we can make these intellectual, rational, and spiritual decisions in our own freedom and volition. That's how you're able to gauge a mature spiritual adult. And so she does the same thing with politics. It would always be inappropriate for me as a clergyman, for me as a priest, from the pulpit to endorse a particular political party or candidate. That is never something that's acceptable. Instead, what's always more Christian, what's more beautiful, is providing the basis of the teaching of the faith, allowing that to be infused in the heart of God's people, and then through that imbuement of God's grace for them to make informed and holy political decisions. That's why at our parish, we're actually going to be hosting holy hours for the upcoming elections. We're going to host four holy hours with the exposition of the Blessed Sacrament, where people are going to come and pray about their vote. They're going to sit in front of the Blessed Sacrament and discern with the Lord how to enact their faithful citizenship. So with that being said, a little bit about the relationship between the church and politics throughout her history. Of course, we know that from the very beginning, the Lord said, give unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give unto God what belongs to God. Jesus in his genius draws this distinction between our responsibility to the state, our responsibility to local politics. We are people in the world, once again, and but not of the world. But part of being in the world is being in history, is being involved in that which surrounds us, but also giving to God what belongs to God. There are certain things which our founding fathers call inalienable rights. There are certain things which belong to the domain of divinity, to the domain of God. It's not given by the authority of the state. Life, marriage, the freedom to have private property, the pursuit of happiness, these are intrinsic to human beings as created in God's likeness and image. So those are things which Mother Church has always defended throughout her history. However, it's been amazing to see Mother Church in this dance, if you will, beginning with monarchies and with empires. And then slowly but surely, once the empire becomes Christianized, the fall of Rome and then the rising of the medieval time period, you see Mother Church becoming herself a political institution, not in the negative sense. That's not a negative thing. It was needed in that time, and Mother Church actually did some pretty splendid activities during the medieval period, from the evangelization of England to the establishment of the university system, orphanages, hospitals, all these wonderful political, in the proper sense of the word, activities that also had a deeper spiritual sphere that were caring for the overall good of the person. Mother Church has continued this relationship even up to the present day. You have Leo XIII writing Rerum Novarum, talking about the role of social justice in the Industrial Revolution. You have Benedict XV during the First World War writing his documents and teachings of the church. And then, of course, you have Pius XII. You have St. John Paul II, who was probably one of the most political popes in church history. Again, I'm speaking about politics in the proper sense here of him involving and talking about the economy, the overall care of humanity in the household. Pope Benedict XVI writing Caritas in Veritate, and of course, Pope Francis continuing that tradition. So this is an essential part of what it means to be Catholic and to really involve ourselves in this process.
You know, I think a lot of Catholics want to escape the difficult, hard work of thinking carefully about a lot of these prudential political questions and want the easy answer of who do I vote for? Which political party should I join on this or that piece of legislation? Do I vote yes or do I vote no? And to be sure, that would be much easier. Like if the church just provided a checklist to everybody and said, just bring this with you to the ballot box and, you know, just follow it. It tells you exactly who to vote for, what to vote for. But as you said, like, besides the fact that there's often not one right answer of who to vote for, because some of these questions have to do with prudential judgments, it also negates the dignity of man to use all the faculties of his mind, his understanding, assessing the context, assessing the issues. In some sense, it's condescending to man to just say, vote for this person or vote for that party, because it means it's implying that, well, you're really not smart or mature enough to think through these issues yourself. It's the way we treat a child in a bad sense. Like, you know, by the time the child, if you have like a three-year-old who's struggling with a basic math problem, like adding 2 + 3, you might just give them the answer. You might not think it's necessary to, you know, teach them basic arithmetic. But like if they're still struggling with arithmetic when they're a teenager, like 18, it's not helpful for them just to give them the answer. Like you need to tell them how to use the tools to figure things out. So I think there's prudence and wisdom in the church's hesitation to endorse a particular candidate, position, or political party. But that also, it brings up something that I've heard from a lot of fellow millennials, and maybe this is just my circle of friends, or maybe this is indicative of a lot of other millennials too, that there's an increasing recognition that Catholic social teaching fits not neatly in either of the two major political parties in America. And I mean, this has always long been the case. The church has always taught that, you know, the Catholic Church is not a political party. It doesn't align with either the major political parties in any country, much less America. But I think in the rising generations, there's been an increasing recognition of this as they've seen each of the political parties continue to sort of disenfranchise Catholics, to promise things like, for example, on the Republican side, promise things in regards to pro-life and religious liberty that they kind of just didn't deliver on. And then on the other hand, sort of neglect other issues that are important to Catholic social teaching. And then on the political left, you know, this just insistent promotion of abortion on demand. And Catholics don't feel at home with either political party. We feel like we're politically homeless. What do you recommend to Catholics, especially young Catholics, that feel like that they don't feel like I'm represented by any of the major political parties that are on display?
Yeah, this is a multi-tiered answer. So I'll start with just the most practical component, which is always prayer. Always going to Christ and asking for that grace of discernment, because the decision does need to be made, and it's always important for us to make that decision. Then the second part of the answer would be, we have to triage. There is a hierarchy of goods. The right to life is more important than opening up a soup kitchen. You know, you have, of course, the topics of such as immigration. You have the topics on same-sex marriage, all these sort of things. So there is a hierarchy of goodness. There's an objective order of what priorities are. And you would have to discern which candidate, again, doesn't matter which political party they are in necessarily, but which candidate is really supporting and endorsing the higher goods and is more likely to support and endorse and preserve the culture of these higher goods in the long run. The third part of the answer I would give is, we need to start being the change that we want to see. If we are disappointed by our political process as it stands, it's our fault, because we've allowed persons who are uninformed by the Catholic genius and intellectual tradition to assume places of authority while we've remained on the sidelines. So the real answer moving forward, and this is always important for Catholics, we need to play the long game. It's not just about the election this year. It's about the election 60 years from now that we're planning. And you know who I want running for president 60 years from now? One of the kids at my school who have been formed in the truth of the church, who have been formed in the teachings and the traditions of our faith, and who understand the responsibility to the body politic and to our nation. That's why I want running for president 60 years from now. So allowing also our children, our grandchildren to be the future senators, House of Representative members, to really inform politics, that's another part of the discussion that we usually don't talk about, but is absolutely vital. So we need to start forming our minds and our hearts to play the long game, and that starts with our children. So I speak with my kids over at the school on a regular basis about running for a political office of some sort. I think that if you have a young man or a young woman who possesses certain gifts and talents, you should encourage them into politics. And then we should form them in the Catholic political tradition. You want kids from your school becoming your member of the House of Representatives for your district or your local circuit court judge. You want our kids and our faithful being in those positions in the future. So that's something else to take into consideration. You have seen that in our own country with several people. If you look at some of the younger politicians who are coming up, you see that they've noticed there's a breakdown in our political system, and they want to be part of what rebuilds it. So you're seeing a lot of these young politicians sort of come out the woodwork. Some of them are only 23, 24 years old. In one of our states, if this person gets elected, they're going to be the youngest House of Representative members ever elected, right? And he has noticed some problems and some issues that he wants to reform. And that's really powerful, and he wants to reform them for the better. He's a good Christian young man. So that's something else that I think is very important as we continue this discussion on faith and politics.
You know, I think one of the temptations for most of us Catholics is to become beholden to one or the other political party and make it more of our fundamental identity than Catholicism. Yes. And it reminds me something we talked about in the last episode on scandals, you know, how the devil is equally happy whether you exaggerate scandals and make your whole Catholic life about complaining about scandals, or if you just bury your head in the sand and ignore them altogether. Like, either one of those two extremes, the devil's always happy with you choosing an extreme. It doesn't matter to him which one. And yeah. I see something analogous with political parties that, you know, if I'm a Republican first and a Catholic sort of second, or if I'm a Democrat first and a Catholic second, the devil's happy either way when we put our political allegiances above our allegiance to Christ and his church. And yeah. I found among my friends that a good litmus test is most of my friends will vote for one of these two major candidates, although I do think there's certainly a viable argument to be made that if neither one of them appeal to you, vote for a third party candidate. We don't have to get into that here, but most of them are going to vote for one of these two major candidates, and most of them are going to have still serious misgivings about the candidate they vote for, because to the extent that that candidate doesn't align with their views and values as Catholics. But the litmus test is, after the candidate you voted for gets into office, are you still holding their feet to the fire on all of these other deficiencies? Are you still challenging them to, you know, bring the common good to the level that the Catholic Church calls it to? If not, if you're more happy that we just got our guy in the office, if you're more happy about that than bringing the common good into alignment with Catholic social teaching, then I think it exposes the fact that maybe your political allegiance is more significant than your religious commitment.
And one of the fallouts of that as well is the inability to recognize good done in a party outside of your own or outside of a system that you're accustomed to.
That's another good litmus test.
Another really good litmus test. We as Catholics need to be detached from those kind of, again, political, ideological categories. We have to be able to rise above them. What I mean by that is not in an arrogant way and not in a prideful way, but using the gift of our reason, by using the gift of our intellect, and by the inheritance of our Catholic intellectual tradition, to really be able to look at the issues and to discern the response that certain candidates or people who are running for office have done in the past or in the present, and to be able to freely acknowledge unbiasedly what's taking place that's good and what's taking place that's bad. Even if we maybe hate one candidate in particular, we can't let that blind us to the fact that he might actually be the better candidate, even though we personally don't like him or we personally don't like her. Maybe we don't like that she's in this particular political ideology or program, but we have to still be able to recognize, wait a second, she's done X, Y, and Z well, and she can probably enforce this better than the person that's within my own party. So this kind of freedom is also very important for us as we're discerning moving forward in our political environment. Too often, we as Catholics have the tendency to get wrapped up in the same kind of frenzy and argument that most other people do. And that writes us off now as white noise, as opposed to when you have people who are becoming radicalized, or you have people who are becoming very extreme and vehement in defending their particular point, whether that be political, socioeconomically, religiously. What really distinguishes Catholicism is our ability to see the points of these sides, to recognize and name the good, and then to make a rational judgment about which one works towards the higher good, detached from any sort of extreme emotional reaction. That's very important for us, because if not, again, we just get swept up in it and we become white noise.
I'm also reminded of something we discussed in the last episode about how anxiety over scandal and doubt is often a manifestation of a lack of faith, and that we need to ask the Lord for the gift of faith that the church will prevail and flourish even during dark periods like the one we're going through. I think that can also be analogized to the current political situation, that come November, after the big general election, if your candidate doesn't win, I know there's going to be a lot of Catholics on either side, the so-called left, the so-called right, that are going to be in despair and going to think, man, this is dark times now for the church and for society, and everything's going to be crippled. The church is going to be persecuted. You know, the litany of despair is going to begin to roll out. I think we need to be beacons of hope, and especially faith at a time like that, that we don't put our faith in politics. We don't put our faith in political candidates. Our faith is in Jesus Christ, who, again, is infinitely superior than, you know, whichever political candidate wins the day.
Yeah. This relationship and faith in Christ is what allows us to move forward after one of our candidates may not have won the election or won in a local office, so that we can then dynamically and with joy engage in that political system to enact effective change that's positive and that really reinforces our Catholic faith. There's another point too that often is not spoken about, and that's the importance of local government. So there is a lot of focus that goes towards the national level, but local influence is very important. This is what we call the principle of subsidiarity. So not only making sure that our local elections are well done and that we vote for candidates who are able to enforce and really enrich our Catholic principles, but also be engaged on a local level. Our parishes be engaged in the city of commerce. For me, example, I'll be going in the next couple of weeks to a chamber meeting for our local commerce, and I'll be meeting with the mayor. I'll be meeting with the chief of police, with the chief of the fire department. They know Father Blake's name. They know that I'm actively involved in the city politic. And therefore, when they're looking to make legislative decisions, St. Mary Catholic Church and School is part of that decision. That's not always the case in a lot of other local communities because we don't take the initiative to become involved in the local city politic. So those sort of things are also very important for us as we move forward. If you can't tell, I do like politics. And actually, there are several opportunities that I had for going to college in political science, but the Lord had different ideas for me. But along that notion, what I've always been drawn to about it is this notion of the involvement of the Catholic ethos in the political sphere and how we as Catholics are very much a people who are involved in the world, very much a people that want to effectively engage the society that surrounds us. So I will encourage any of our listeners who maybe you have political tendencies. That's not a vice. That's actually a virtue, right? It's a virtue to want to know how politics works and to enjoy these sort of things. That might be a gift that the Lord's given you. Don't waste it. Start praying about whether or not the Lord might be calling you to run for an office. That's the kind of people that we want in office. We want people who are formed by Catholic sentiment and our Catholic mentality. We want people who really know how to uphold all the different virtues of our faith and to defend them.
So if you can't tell, Father Blake and I both agree that all Catholics should vote. All Catholics should be faithful citizens. In fact, that's probably a good place to start. Every 4 years, I believe, for the general election cycles, the USCCB, so the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in America, they release a document called Faithful Citizenship. And it's usually roughly the same document that's kind of updated or tweaked every 4 years, but the core of it's the same. That's a good place to start for getting your sort of general foundational spiritual principles when it comes to voting and being a faithful citizen. Again, it's not going to tell you who to vote for. It's not going to tell you which party to vote for. You might not like which things it emphasizes or de-emphasizes, but it's a good starting point. And again, this is the bishops of America collectively speaking to Catholics, so we should at least receive it respectively and with docility and take it into consideration. But then from there, you know, we each have to make our own prudential decisions about who and what to vote for. But Father Blake, I wanted to circle back to Aaron's original question, which was less about politics and more about news. I mean, it's somewhat related. What sources do I go to for reliable, trustworthy news? And I think you can detect behind that question, she's saying, I want to avoid, you know, the rhetorically extreme news channels and websites, you know, that are so undeniably partisan. They don't even try to hide their citizenship. Right. And it's all of our stuff is good. Everyone else is evil and bad. She wants to get away from that, which I commend. I'll just say a couple things on my own, Aaron, and then I'll flip it to Father Blake. I try to consume a lot of my news online. So I don't basically ever watch TV news. I think TV news, for all sorts of reasons that I don't want to get into, is not the best way to absorb your news. I think part of the reason is because there's much more gatekeepers for TV news onto what gets on there. In some ways, that's good because it, you know, it's meant to prevent bad stuff from getting through the gate. But more often, it means your options are so limited, and you get either a hyper conservative channel or a hyper liberal channel. There's very few balanced things in between. So I don't consume stuff through TV. I get almost all of my news through the internet. However, on the internet, I try to assiduously avoid getting news through social media. And again, I don't want to get into all the reasons why, but the way that algorithms work on most social media channels is they prioritize incendiary, inflammatory, extreme, clickbaity news articles and headlines. So if you're getting your news from a Facebook feed, it's almost certainly slanted and extreme one way or the other. So I don't recommend social media. So I get most of my news through websites, and I don't favor or bookmark one or two specific websites. I try to have a wide, broad sampling of things. I do like to read what are considered far right websites and far right left site, far left websites. So I kind of am getting the best case on both sides, you know, the best case for this far right position, the best case for this far left position. But I spend most of my time reading stuff more in the middle in a balanced area. If I can mention just one website that I really like and probably one of the ones I check the most, it's called allsides.com, allsides.com, A-L-L sides.com. What I like about it is it's a news site. So when you go there, you'll see, you know, headlines and topics and news stories. But for every topic, you know, maybe there's, you know, some breaking piece of legislation, it'll have the headline of that legislation, but then it includes at least, always at least, three articles, one from the far right, one from the far left, and one from the middle. And then for each one of those sources, there's like a little meter, which I think it has like LLCRR, and there it highlights where this news source falls along that spectrum, whether it's all the way on the right, whether it's more in the center, whether it's more in the left. And so you're informed about, you know, what's the slant of this organization or website that I'm reading this from. So I like it because it's kind of a clearinghouse. It brings together news articles and political updates from, you know, all sorts of different places. It's not trying to give you just one source and saying this is the one you need to read. You want to have a broad sampling. So that's kind of my modus operandi. I'd love to hear what Father Blake does and thinks.
Yeah, I'll use the same principle that I have with my eighth grade class, primary versus secondary resources. It is never good to get our news or our facts from a secondary resource first. It's always better to get it from a primary resource. What does that mean? If someone claims that the president of the United States said something, don't read that article. Read what the president of the United States said and read the whole thing of what he said, not just a section of it. If they claim that a piece of legislation is going to do X, Y, or Z, don't read the article that is supporting or condemning the legislation. Read the piece of legislation itself. This is something I've done also throughout COVID-19. Different networks will emphasize COVID-19 in different ways. What do I read? The CDC reports, the case studies, the scientific journals that are producing these studies. That's what I'm reading, as opposed to secondhand accounts of what those studies have said or secondhand account of what the CDC recommends. Read the actual primary resources. So that's going to be key. And also to free yourself once again from necessarily a fear of far left, far right, middle. Those are not always the best categories to have. In the end, we're concerned about the truth. So if a far-right newspaper is saying something that's true, it's true. That's why, again, knowing what the facts and the data are from a primary resource is so key. So just because a far-right or far-left magazine or article or news station, I agree with Brandon. I think that TV news now is not so much news. That's an inappropriate title nowadays. It's more commentators. And that's fair to say. And there are some people that like political commentators. I listen to several political commentators. I enjoy them. But they're not my source for news because they're commentators on the news. And there's a difference between getting the news and getting commentation on the news. So I agree with Brandon that television news is not the best place to get it from. But so I also read the majority of my online, again, primary resources. One of the recent things would have been a report came out about something that the president apparently had said. Well, read the transcription, read the actual transcript. And then from reading that transcript, make your own decision. Make a rational intellectual judgment on the gravity of what was said, as opposed to seeing what different people are saying about what was said. I think that's a really good place to start. And especially when it comes to government documents, whether that be a transcript from the White House or a transcript from the House of Representatives or the Senate, all those things are public documents. So you can access them through government websites and read them firsthand. Some of them are some of them are very long. So if you read a piece of legislation that's 1,000 pages, you know, I'm not saying to read the 1,000 pages, but it is important to read some of the legislation. I mean, those sort of things are crucial in order for us to make rational. I think that's one of the biggest problems right now in the field of politics is that most of us receive our political influence, opinion, and ideas secondhand, as opposed to going to the source itself and making informed, rational decisions from that place.
You know, I think another major problem, and I assume you'll agree with me on this, that when it comes to Catholics assessing political news or political commentary, our framework tends to be either feelings-based, so either what that person said feels right or feels wrong, or it's driven by our our partisan allegiance. So if my guy says it, it's right, or I agree with it. If the other guy says it, it's definitely wrong. Instead of our framework and our lens being Catholic social teaching and saying, oh, that's right because it aligns with Catholic social teaching, which I know is divinely inspired. So if that's true, though, it means before you can even begin to intelligently engage and assess political questions, you have to get really clear and well-formed with Catholic social teaching. You have to build that foundation up. So I'd probably recommend, even before discerning what news sites to read or spending, you know, an hour a day going through the headlines and the feeds on this or that political website, maybe spend 20 minutes a day reading some Catholic social teaching encyclicals. We're actually, I don't have it here yet. I don't think it'll be out, I think, at the end of October. We're preparing a one-volume book at Word on Fire, in our Word on Fire Classics line, that collects several encyclicals and excerpts from church documents across the Catholic social teaching tradition. So like 200 or 300 years of documents. So we've got Rerum Novarum by Leo XIII. We've got Centesimus Annus and a few others by John Paul II. We've got Caritas in Veritate by Benedict. We've got several writings and homilies from social-minded saints like Mother Teresa and Dorothy Day and Oscar Romero and people like that. So that book will give you like a good grounding in the church's social positions by which you can judge all of our national and international political questions. So that'd probably be the last bit of advice I'd give is, as a Catholic, your first duty is to form yourself in the Catholic understanding of social doctrine before you come to the more specific, concrete questions of local and national politics.
Absolutely. There's another little gem that I would encourage everyone to read, the Compendium of the Social Teaching of the Church. This is one of those treasures that most Catholics don't even know exist. It was originally put together by Cardinal Van Tuan, who was a cardinal from Vietnam, who was horrifically tortured and thrown into solitary confinement. Really a saintly man. He was elevated to cardinal by St. John Paul II and also put in charge of commissioning this compendium. But that there also is a collection of all the teachings of the Catholic Church in the realm of social justice. It starts off with a basic Catholic anthropology. What are the basic rights of man based upon his creation as God's likeness and image? And it builds a Catholic social teaching from that dynamic. I agree absolutely with you, Brandon. Having that foundation is seminal to reading these primary resources and then entering in a dialogue with the secondary resources. I enter in a dialogue with the secondary resources on a regular basis, but it's only because I know the teachings of the church and it's because I've read most of these transcripts and things firsthand, so I know what we're talking about. And then I can enter into the commentators and their different opinions they might express politically.
All right. Well, maybe let's wrap up with this. I'm anticipating some of the comments and emails we're going to get after this episode. And I can almost guarantee that there's going to be several people who say some version of, yeah, but I'm fine with everything you just said. Yeah, but there's clearly one candidate that Catholics should vote for. And the other one is so evil that you have to vote for this one. Now think about, I think another interesting litmus test is, as I'm saying that, if you're watching or listening to this episode, if immediately one person jumped into your mind right now as the good guy and the other person is the evil guy, again, it might be a sign that you've become so committed to this light versus darkness partisan sort of divide that maybe you need to reassess things. But what would you say, Father Blake, to that sort of response that are like, why didn't Father Blake and Brandon just tell all Catholics, vote for this one clearly good guy, or at least if he's not good, this is clearly the best option? What do you say to that?
We respect your freedom, and we can't do more than Mother Church does. I mean, that's the basic answer, is that in the end, we are obedient sons of the church, and we want to think with Mother Church. So we don't want to think with a political party. We don't want to think with a political institution. We want to think with Mother Church. And the way that she works, the way that she operates, is always in this domain of freedom. And when I say freedom, again, it's not just letting you go freelancing and doing whatever you want, but it's informing with the truth and allowing that information to then inform your decision so that we can make adult decisions that are really free of our own volition. That's also crucial to the democratic process and to the Republican process. And when I say Republican, I mean our country as a republic, as a democratic republic. So that's something that's very, very important for us in order to properly integrate and to operate in our faithful citizenship. So that's why we're not endorsing any particular political candidate. And nor would I necessarily condemn anyone who supports either one of the major candidates or an independent candidate. That's not appropriate either. In the end, we have to trust that we're sharing the truth. We know what the bishops have shared from the USCCB. That document on faithful citizenship is very helpful. And we have to trust that Catholics are making decision out of the goodness of their hearts. And this is where I'll actually say my last point. Always presume that people are doing things for good reasons, even if it's the wrong thing.
Yeah.
We don't presume that enough of people. So we think that if they don't agree with us, it must be because they are desiring an evil or they're looking for an evil. And that is never the case. St. Augustine teaches us that. Everyone does something for the good, even if it is an inappropriate or wrong thing. So that would help us in our dialogue with others as well. When I speak with someone, for example, in our case, who's very pro-choice, who's pro-abortion is a better way to put it, I'm presuming that they're pro-abortion not because they just hate babies. They're pro-abortion because they have either a misunderstanding of what life is, an improper understanding of life, or they're trying to preserve the goodness of women and their freedom and their dignity. What I disagree with them with is that is not a preservation of a woman's dignity and freedom. That is not how we respect life. These are inappropriate forms. Although your content may be good, your content, what you desire is good, but it's inappropriate and wrong the form in which you're desiring that. But in the end, you're a good human being. You're a good person. You're beloved by God. And what we have to do is slowly bring you to the fullness of truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's just so important for us, or else we're going to keep on staying at each other's throats and no authentic progress will take place.
Well said. Well, we'll leave it at that and we'll expect a flurry of angry emails, I'm sure, after this episode. But I hope we've given you at least some good things to think about. I still think, Father Blake, I love the title of the bishop's document, which is Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship.
Yes.
Like, to me, those five words sum it up. That's the task of every Catholic. Form your conscience well in light of Catholic social teaching so that you can become a faithful citizen. A citizen, so you're involved in the common good, but faithfully with the religious ethos animating it. I think that sums up everything we've talked about. Forming consciences for faithful citizenship. Good. Well, we'll leave it at that. Thanks so much to everybody for listening. Again, we'd love to hear from you. I don't want to discourage comments, but hopefully you won't castigate us too hard. But thanks so much for listening. We'll see you guys in a couple more weeks on the next episode of the Burrowshire podcast.
God bless everybody.